Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast, bringing together two friends with stories that need sharing. Join us, Jodie and Nicole, as we navigate life after loss, discussing topics around birth, trauma, and baby loss, and providing a safe space for others to share their stories. Hello everyone, welcome back to Look to the Moon podcast. This is episode 6.
Yeah.
So firstly, we'll just have a little catch up. We haven't actually seen each other for a while, have we, Jodie?
No, it's been a while. We were scheduled last Sunday because we tried to record at a weekend when we've both got a little bit more time. But you had a bit of a disaster.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about it.
Disaster. So my daughter Lila, who's 3, so we arranged to do our podcast filming, didn't we?
Yeah.
Filming, recording, whatever you want to call it, last Sunday. And I had to text Jodie in a flap and a panic to say that we were in hospital because my daughter decided to split her head open.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, so it was an absolute nightmare last week. We were doing really well, actually. We decided to clean the house. I was cleaning upstairs, and Lila then saw a spare bed.
See, nothing comes out of cleaning.
No, exactly. Well, we'll be doing it again for a long time, let me tell you that. Oh, so yeah, cleaned the spare room, took off all the clothes that were piled on the bed, and Lila was like, oh yeah, bouncy bed, I'll have a jump on that.
Yeah, great opportunity.
Yeah, jumped and fell and cracked her head open on the cabinet. So,
oh, bless her.
Oh yeah, it was awful. It was horrific. Like, hurt anyone... child when they hurt themselves,
yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it? But I think it really hit us more because obviously since we lost Luna last mm-hmm. year, I've been so overprotective. You know, I just want to wrap her up in cotton wool. Like, don't do anything stupid. Like, she climbs up a slide, I'm like, we don't climb up slides, Lila. Yeah. We only go down
the right way.
Yeah, like, honestly, I'm that annoying mum that tells her off for doing everything that the other kids are doing. But
yeah.
I'm just absolutely petrified of her hurting herself.
And then having to go back to hospital.
So that's the whole point of it is, for one, I don't want her to hurt herself, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's more because I just think, I go to worst case scenario, like mm-hmm. she's tripped, she's fell, oh my god, she's broken a leg, like it's horrific, and she's just got a scratch, but this time she actually did, it was blood and everything, and she split open the front of her head, right in her hairline.
And she was really upset.
She was so upset, yeah, so I was trying to be brave, and like obviously trying to be brave for Richard, because I've dealt with that loads of times, being, you know, previous.
It's different when it's your own.
It is different when it's your own.
Because you sort of, you have no emotional attachment necessarily to your patients, you've got that compassion, but when it's your own kid, you just,
it's just awful,
try not to
isn't
panic.
It? Yeah.
But
we did.
But your parenting
instincts comes in as well.
And your parent overrides your nurse.
Yeah, oh god, instinct. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, we had a bit of a flap and a bit of a panic, but we didn't want to upset Lila too much, but we ended up having to go to hospital just to get it checked out.
Mm.
And obviously I don't have any, well, didn't really have much equipment at home anyway, but definitely don't have any equipment to, other than a plaster, but I couldn't stick a plaster in a hairline.
No.
So we went to the hospital that I used to work at, which is better because I do know some of the staff that work there still, so they're very understanding of everything that's happened, and they were really good. They got us in and out as quick as they could.
Yeah.
Well, Lila wouldn't let them do anything anyway. Like, she absolutely screamed the place down, bless her. So the doctor very kindly just sent me home with some stuff so I could do it myself at home once everyone had calmed down. So yeah, we did manage to clean it up in the bath, bit of distraction. Managed to clean it up, but needed to put a bit of glue on it really, but couldn't get any on it. So luckily it's in a hairline. We thought, well, if it heals and has a tiny scar, then nobody will see it anyway. So yeah, so that was disastrous. So that was Sunday straight out the window, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just got a text going, cancelled. Yeah. Lila split her head open.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
I know. Oh, it was very dramatic, wasn't it? So yeah, poor little poppet. So we had a little A&E trip and then back to nursery, or preschool. She tells me off to call it nursery now. It's preschool, mummy.
It's big girl preschool.
Big school. And she hates it, but she tells me off if I call it nursery.
Mm.
Back to preschool on Monday because she was fine. She wasn't sick.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't really complain of it. She just wanted to show everyone her war wounds.
Mm-hmm.
So she was fine.
I've done.
Yeah. Told them to be careful that she didn't knock it or no one knocked it at preschool.
Mm.
Monday, Tuesday were fine, but then Tuesday she then woke up with a sickness bug as well.
One thing after another.
I know. So we had no, and she's not like a sickie, never been a sickie baby, sickie child really.
Mm.
But she just woke up in the middle of the night about, 3 in the morning. And was like, mummy, I need to spit, bless her.
Oh,
I need to spit. So I took her to the bathroom and I was like, oh, I know what this means. You know, when you get like watery mouth. And yeah. It's like, oh, and the next minute she just threw up everywhere. Oh, God. Nice. So every time we lay her back down, put her in our bed with us because we've got an ensuite so we can literally run to the toilet.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, that's danger zone, isn't it?
No, rather than it. I know, yeah, projectile vomit in your face.
And in your bed, but 3 in the morning.
She didn't. Every time she needed to be sick, she was dead good. And she was like, I need to be sick, and ran to the toilet, bless her. So she was like sick about 6 times during the night. So, yeah, so that we had no sleep, but now we're self-employed. Can't have sick days, can we? Bloody hell. So Richard had to stay at home with Lila. I went to the shop and opened up, and he had a little chill day with Lila. And my mum did help, actually, in the afternoon. So she went to Nanny's, because she was fine after about 6 o'clock in the morning. She was fine. She was like, I'm fine now, mummy. I want to eat breakfast.
So it's like 24-hour thing, maybe.
Yeah, she wanted to eat cake and cheese at 9 o'clock in the morning. I was like, oh, my God, no. I'd like to have some water.
I'm a bit like, when Bonnie's been poorly, bless her, and on an average day, if she doesn't eat well, I'm like, well, you go hungry then.
Yeah.
But then when they're sick, you're like, just eat some cake.
Yeah, have whatever
anything,
you want.
Anything
yeah.
you want.
Have whatever you want, bless her. Yeah, so she went to Nanny's and Nanny took her to the park for some fresh air, and she was absolutely fine. She's been fine since.
She's literally had a really shit week, but she's okay now.
They bounce back, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been fine now. So, yeah, we've had a good weekend, no injuries.
Good.
So, yeah. How are you, Jodie? How's your, week? 2 weeks, months, yeah. However long it's been.
Yeah, it's there's nothing really new to report with me. We're still struggling with the house move.
Yeah. Have you mentioned that before on here? I don't know if you have you?
No, but it's all a bit of a long story. We were trying to buy a property last year, sort of in November last year. We put an offer in and it was an old pub.
Yeah.
But it was obviously still had a commercial licence on it. So the current owner...
It's a shit house.
Yeah.
Can I say that? Well, what? I just did. I said he's a shit house.
Yeah. He's horrible. He applied for a planning permission to do the change of use to residential, which was what we were waiting for months and months and months and months. So we put an offer in November on the condition that it would get a residential change of use. Came in the beginning of October. August, the planning permission, and he just sold it to somebody else.
What an asshole.
And we'd had buyers, lost buyers, got new buyers, which we've still got, thankfully.
Yeah.
So we were originally buying that property with my mum and dad because it had two properties. It had a barn conversion and the main house on that plot of land. So we were hoping to do something similar, but they're few and far between when you're trying to house two families. So we've been looking for a shared accommodation, like something with an annex or whatever, and looking for ourselves. So I've not told you this, actually, so this is a new piece of information. We actually have found a house.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah. Well, we found a house.
Yeah.
And we were going to put an offer in.
Oh.
And then it came back. I think it was one I showed you that wasn't far away.
Yeah.
We found out that they've had an extension built without planning permission.
Oh, that's a bit awkward.
So I was like, well, I'm not going down this road, because if we're not doing it with the parents, it should be fairly straightforward to find a house, however long that takes, and buy it. I don't want the aggro.
No.
When...
Oh, that'll be a disaster, because it like encroaches on someone else's land.
No, and I think it was built before the previous owner.
Yeah.
But it's all come to light that...
It's come to light now.
Yeah, and the estate agent just doesn't know what they're talking about. So I was like, no, I'm better off out of that one.
Yeah.
So we found another house that's slightly out of budget, but we should be able to manage to get it. And we went for a viewing...
Is this just as your family?
No, this is just for,
not for mum and dad.
Not for mum and dad, this is just for us. But we went to view it earlier in the week and we really, really do like it. And it's like a 5-bed house, so it's certainly not great for us.
Spare room for me.
Spare room for Nicole when we want to do some late night podcasting. So we have our own podcast room there.
Oh, we could, couldn't we?
But when we went to look at it, the owners were like, oh, we've seen a property and they told me which property it was, and I was like, well, I know right move, like the back of my hand. So I know which one you're talking about, and it's an auction property, so it's all very complicated. And they were like, but if we don't get that, we're not moving.
Oh.
So we were like, oh, great. Yeah. So they rung us and we put an offer in and it was accepted. And the estate agent's now told us that if they don't get that one, they're going to find something else. But then...
Okay. But do you believe them after all that?
I don't know. I'm not very hopeful or optimistic after the 12 months nearly.
Well, you had a right palaver with the other one, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. And then my neighbours won't listen to this, but we've got horrible neighbours.
Well, if we get a horrible message now, we know that they do.
Yeah, no, they won't. They don't talk to us and we don't talk to them, but they're like really noisy.
They might stalk you.
No. They're very self-involved and they've got about 17 dogs that they leave barking. We've just checked out of this house, so we really, really
You're
want
to You're ready to go, aren't you?
We need a fresh start, and I think after like the year we've had, you know, we were at the back end of last year, we thought this is a new start going for this property. And it was something I probably shouldn't have done, but I got really emotionally invested in not necessarily the property, because the property was lovely, but it was the way of life that it would give us, you know, being close to my parents, you know, and they adore my daughter, and, you know, having them close by, you know, we've got a really good relationship, and you know, it was on a plot of land, and, you know, I could picture like the birthday parties we could have for her, and you know, the Christmases, and it sort of like he just took all that away with one snap decision. And it wasn't about money. It wasn't like this other party offered more money or anything. He just went, oh yeah, I'll have them.
I'll
and there was
them.
And he didn't explain why, even though we were the only ones that had been involved right from the very beginning. This other interested party had come in a couple of months before.
Yeah.
And he just he picked them, and yeah, he's just not a nice person. But so we've emotionally checked out of this house, and we were looking forward to, like you say, a fresh start as a family. But hopefully,
fingers crossed.
So if, like say, that offer's gone in, it's been accepted,
yeah,
so they either have to buy this other property or find something. But
that's it. Oh, how long to show me later.
Oh, I'll show you. I'll
yeah, okay, excellent.
It's local, so we don't have to like uproot her out of nursery or anything. So yeah, it's that's the only piece of other news I've got.
Well, you know, only life-changing news, Jamie.
Only life-changing news. Yeah, buying a house that we can't afford.
Well, never mind. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, we will. Yeah,
exactly.
We'll get there, but
this is why they say buying the house is one of the most stressful things you'll ever do. I said to Richard when we moved out, that's it. I'm never moving again. It was awful.
And that was your first house.
I know.
No, it wasn't. No,
well,
you were
rented.
Rented, yeah.
But so that's not the same, is it? Because you don't have all the furniture to up and we did, but yeah,
we did.
not much yeah,
but no, that's the only thing that's new with me.
Well, it'll be worth it if you do get it, and then
well,
when you're settled
you
in, yeah,
I'll keep you posted.
We'll keep you posted. Oh, exciting. That's good. Right, so what we're going to do this week then, Jodie, is we're going to talk about NICU, aren't we? Or NICU, you call it NICU, I call it NICU. You'll have to tell
NICU.
What
NICU, I don't know, how would you say it?
I just say NICU.
NICU.
NICU. I don't know now you've said that. What
oh,
do I say?
God.
NICU. I say NICU.
I've got a couple of friends that really take the piss out of how I talk.
Why?
Like, certain words I pronounce completely differently.
Yeah.
Like, contribute.
Contribute.
But you say contribute.
Contribute. Contribute.
I say contribute.
Oh, right. I've never
And they really take the piss out of me. So, you know, if they listen, they'll know who I'm talking about. I saw them, like, last night, and they were making fun out of how I said contribute and adult.
Adult.
Adult. Why is that wrong? So you can't take my pronunciation.
No, that's not. It's
because
NICU.
I get out.
NICU.
I get out.
You say NICU, I think, don't you?
What do you want me to say?
NICU.
NICU. Neonatal.
Neonatal intensive care unit. We'll give it the whole the whole word.
Yeah. So it's NICU. NICU.
NICU.
NICU. Nick.
Yeah.
I'm saying Nick. I need
Nick,
to say Nick.
You.
Nick. You.
Yeah,
right,
thank you.
Okay. Awareness Month in September.
Yes.
So we said in the last episode that we would, because we've both got experience of being a neonatal parent, that we would talk about, or maybe expand on our experiences, and talk about some of the statistics, which are, when we've looked into it, so shocking.
Shocking, isn't it? Yeah.
It's shocking, the, you know, the figures that we've done some research into. So yeah, obviously that we've both been in intensive care with our daughters last year, and I just found the whole experience bizarre.
It's yeah, probably absolutely.
The one word I could use to sum it up. But
yeah.
And it's eerie.
It is.
And I've said that in another episode before.
Yeah, definitely. I think we said, like, you don't know about NICU mm-hmm. until you're in it. And it's a complete other world.
It is.
Which, you know, you should be very grateful if you've never had to go through that experience, because it is it's just the most awful place that you could be in. And obviously it's, you're not in it yourself, it's your baby that you're having to watch go through it, mm-hmm. which is obviously makes everything worse. But the whole environment, like, obviously the staff are amazing, mm-hmm. But it's just the environment, like you say, it's eerie.
Yeah, it's there's a place a you lot. Never want to be, no, because no. if you're there's something wrong.
Exactly,
basically.
Yeah.
It's not a it's not a nice place to end up. And I think, you know, no one expects to end up there. So I remember going through that whole process in a little bit of shock and denial. And you're very detached, because mm-hmm. you have to be. You're physically detached from your baby. Mm-hmm. And it's really not a nice place to be at all. But there's different rooms, isn't there? Which is...
Yeah, so we were at different trusts,
so that's why...
Well, we've been... in three different NICUs between us. I've been in two and you've been in another one. So we've actually been in three hospital NICUs. And the two that I were in were completely different. Like, completely different. And I'm sure you're the one that we... Obviously, we're not going to mention names of the hospitals. But I'm sure the one that you were in as well would be completely different again from the two that I was in. Even though, obviously, they all do the same things and work to the same regulations and stuff. Yeah. But,
goes for any care, doesn't it? Like, I found that because my maternity care was under one trust, but I birthed at another.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't talk to each other, which was one of the main issues. Mm-hmm. And they also dealt with situations in a completely different way.
Yeah, that was the same with us,
which just makes care quite frustrating, especially for you with the NICU care. So you said it right there. NICU. NICU.
Yeah.
You've been in two different trusts, so I haven't got two different trusts to compare it from that kind of care. But I remember being very impressed with the trust from an EQ perspective. The NICU. NICU.
See what I mean? See how she says it now. NICU.
NICU.
NICU. NICU. Oh, it doesn't matter. NICU. We know what you mean.
Yeah. NICU.
Yeah. She says it differently every time.
Yeah. It was, we were really, really impressed, like, with the way that it was run, you know, the communication that we received. They've made it easier for us, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was quite strange for us, because I think we were one of the only full-term babies on the ward or in the unit, whatever you want to call it, probably unit. Every other baby that we saw was a preemie
at different stages. Bizarre, considering given the statistics.
When we were looking at the stats, so we had a look at the stats about, you know, sort of gestational age on admissions, and it said that 62% of admissions were after 37 weeks, which is obviously classed as full term. Which I found really, really surprising.
Yeah, definitely.
Because then you've got the statistics, we've got the statistics in front of us at the moment, and you fall into the category of before 25 weeks.
Yeah.
So these statistics, I think, are... These are from 2016, so they're a little bit out of date.
Wonder if it's changed a lot then.
It might. I'll have to see if I can find some more updated statistics. But from 2016, over 100,000 babies in the UK, so England, Scotland and Wales, were admitted to into neonatal care. And only 1.2% were before 25 weeks, which is the category you fall into. Yeah. And then it goes from 26 to 32 weeks, which is 10.2%, and 33 to 36 is 26.6%. So it's even combined. So before 36 weeks backwards,
yeah,
that doesn't even equate to the number of babies born after 37 weeks that required neonatal care.
No.
Which doesn't fit with what I saw when I was at the trust we were at.
No.
Every single baby that we saw that we came across was born
premature.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the ones that we came across were born at like 26, 27, 28 weeks. They were all seemed to be in the 20s.
Yeah.
And so we were... We had many, many staff say to us, you know, oh, yeah, your baby's massive. And I've mentioned this before. I'm like, she's not massive. She's just born at full term.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm really surprised at those statistics. I don't know if you are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like you say, it is shocking.
Yeah.
Because, like I said before, unless you're in this situation of being premature or a poorly baby that's in NICU, you wouldn't ever think of looking at them, because why would you? Because it's not
well,
nice.
Well, you wouldn't. No,
it's
you
not
don't,
nice.
You don't look at them.
No, not nice to look at. I bet you that has changed. We'll have to have a look at recent ones, because I wonder when... It's only recently that they've started looking after babies from 22 weeks, isn't it?
I don't know. When did that come in?
I don't think it's as far back as 2016, so I wonder if that percentage for under 25 weeks has gone up. I would have thought so, because when we were, like you say, when we were in there with Luna, most of the babies were premature. Maybe not as premature as Luna, but some of them were as premature as Luna.
Yeah.
And most of them were premature. I suppose it depends what room you're in as well. Because you know when I said about the room...
They're all different, aren't they? Depending on the...
The gestational age. Yeah.
But it's all about... Because, well, our trust, it wasn't... It was about dependency.
Well, yeah, dependency, yeah.
Yeah,
no, that's
so we
true.
Had... So we were opposite a family who... I think their son was born at around 28 weeks. Mm. So they'd been there a while by the time we were admitted. And they were directly opposite. And in our room, there was only four babies, including our daughter. So... and one of the beds was empty... and we had, there was a couple of families that came and went as we were there as well, which is great because that means that they sort of moved into a new room, which might have been like a low dependency. So yeah, we went from the high dependency to the low dependency room. Mm-hmm. And they were numbered.
Yes, ours were as well.
You know, and so we were like in the number one room. And
we were in number six.
Number six.
Which is... the highest dependency. So that's how ours worked, is when you walked into the unit, you had like your reception desk.
Oh, well, no. So when I say number one, it was numbered number one, but it was at the furthest of the corridor.
Was it? Yeah. Because I remember talking to you about this, how the first NICU that we went to, you walked in, you've got like your reception. The room that's closest to them, which is closest to the door, was room one,
which was
like the last room before you went home.
Kind
of thing. So
maybe
then,
they did it in the reverse.
We had
it was numbered one and
right
was
like, to the bottom end of the unit to room six, which was the highest dependency.
Yeah,
like one to one care.
Yes, yes. Well, I think, like you say, it was room one that they were in, if I've remembered rightly. Or I don't know, but it was
at the end of the
corridor.
It
was the end of the corridor. Yeah. And then she moved closer.
Yeah, to the door
before being discharged. Yeah.
See, that's I remember that. That's what we always talked about, is when we walked, you're like, you have to walk past all the rooms. And I don't know what your corridors were like, but the corridors walking down to the rooms were lined with success stories.
They had like a tree.
And we used to read it. They had like pictures of the babies when they were first born, and then pictures of the babies like now, and they told you the gestational age and you know a little bit about them. And I loved walking down that corridor and reading the success stories, especially the ones that were of the gestational age of Luna.
Yeah,
because it just gives you a bit of hope.
Yeah,
but then the doctors always let that hope go when they give you the statistics.
Yeah, well, you said they just sort of handed you some statistics, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So before we actually delivered Luna, when we were in our first hospital, our local trust, that was our like maternal care trust, they were obviously expecting me to go into labour straight away because my waters had broke. So we had to have multiple meetings with like a whole multidisciplinary team, like the neonatal and the obstetrics and paediatrics. Everyone was there, and they just hand you a piece of paper or a pile of papers basically, and it was just like these that we've been looking at, like pie charts,
yeah,
with statistics, but of gestational age and survival rate. So they were just like saying, like, look how small the percentage of survival rate. But we just saw, well, there's still a percentage there. Yeah, there's still a chance.
Well, that's not what you need.
No.
At that point. Why would you even... Yes, we're looking at stats now, but it's to give people who are listening a bit of context to what we're saying. It's not like we're sat here going, oh, you know, one in so many. And we're just trying to give some statistics for anyone that probably doesn't know what the sort of scale is when we're talking about you know, neonatal care. But why would you
they just said like it's that? Because they have to be realistic with you and they have to tell you the worst case scenario.
But you could do that without giving you a list of pie charts and things that
I
you
put
just...
them straight in my bag and we never looked at them again.
No, I don't blame you.
Yeah, but yeah, they made a point of referring back to the charts every time they talked to us, and we're like, yeah we know. But Luna's going to be that, you know, 2% that does survive, so...
Yeah.
Up yours.
Yeah. It's just, like you say, it's just not what you need.
No, because you need to be, like, when you're in that situation, you have to... We clinged on to the little bit of hope that there was, because you have to. Because that's your baby. That was our daughter. Like, obviously, we wanted to survive.
Yeah.
And, yes, we're not stupid. Like, we know that she was born extreme premature and that there was going to be problems, but she was doing really well.
Yeah.
Until they messed up. Until, anyway.
And this is why, yes, we're looking at these statistics, and it says here, I was just having a look at, so it says the statistics in, I'm looking at a document at the moment, that is for 2022, the Office of National Statistics for Child and Infant Mortality in England and Wales, and... The where was I just looking? Yeah, it says here. So, oh my god, where is it? I'm talking about gestational age. It says so. It says representing infants born before 24 weeks gestation account for 29.5% of neonatal deaths in 2022. But there has been an improvement in mortality rate because that has fallen to 35.6 from 35.6%. And then it goes on to talk about the causes of death, which, so this is where the statistics are probably misleading, because when we're talking about Luna's case, it wasn't her prematurity that was the cause of death. It was the prematurity was the reason she couldn't recover from the injury she sustained during her care. That's right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes into like birth rate, birth weights, immaturity related conditions account for 51.2% of neonatal deaths.
Because it's like the lung development, isn't it?
Yeah, and infections. So and that's for another 41.6, but that only takes you to just over 93%.
Yeah.
So Luna will probably slot into that 6-point-something% where they've not got they've not, in this statistical document, they've not measured that.
No.
You know, sort of failure in care.
Well, they won't, will they?
Well, they're not, no. And it goes into, like, maternal age as well, like, ages of the mothers. But it all seems to be fairly consistent across the board. Like, it doesn't really matter how old you are.
No.
But it does say mothers under the age of 39 are a consistently lower risk in 2022. But yeah, we were reading about countries around the world as well, again, which is really, really surprising. Not necessarily surprising, but it does make sense, because the neonatal mortality rate in more deprived countries is a lot higher.
Yeah.
So for reference, like the UK ranks about 3 per 1,000 live births with neonatal mortality. So basically 3 babies in 1,000 will die in the UK in the first 28 days of life under neonatal care, where you've got a country, the worst rate in the world is South Sudan at a rate of 40 per 1,000, which is, it's just shocking. But countries with the lowest rates include Singapore and Iceland with only 1 in 1,000.
Iceland, that's bizarre, isn't it? I don't know why. I would never think
There's no reasoning behind these statistics on the site that we're looking at, but because we're on the BLIS site at the moment, but we've also been on the National Statistics as well, or Office for National Statistics.
Yeah.
But we saw, like, because we've also looked at the length of stay, which is fairly obvious that the younger a baby is born, the longer their neonatal stay will be. So, like, for before 27 weeks, it's 92 days. Mm-hmm. That's over 3 months, which, you know, they're trying to get them up to term age, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can let you go a little bit before.
If you're well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they pretty much need to get you back up to, like, what, went like 40 weeks.
Yeah,
you should
be
giving birth.
Yeah, because you're full term at 37 weeks.
Yeah.
So, it says here, more than 37 weeks, the average length of the stay is 4 days. So, like, for us, our daughter was born the day after her due date.
Yeah.
Or she was delivered via C-section after her due date. And her length of stay was 10 days.
Yeah.
So she was maybe above average, but that definitely was probably due to the extent of her damage.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw, like, say, we saw people that had been there for weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
And we saw people that, like, say, came and went.
You
know, they had a day or two of, you know, intensive care, and then they were discharged or moved into the lower dependency. But it was sad. All of the cases are sad. But we came across this. She was very young girl, from the local area. Actually, no, I don't think she was local, because she was. They'd given her a flat.
Yeah, we did.
And she had a very, very premature baby, and she was just on her own.
Oh gosh, I can't imagine doing that on your own.
No, and she was, when I say young, I mean she was
teenager,
maybe late teens, I would say. And she told us that, like, basically she'd had a one night stand or had a very short term relationship with the baby's father, and he wasn't involved, and that she wasn't local, and her family weren't interested, and
this
poor girl is completely alone. And, you know, they've got the family rooms there, haven't they, so you can sort of, they've got like sort of kitchen facilities, you know, you can store your food and make something new. And she always used to strike up a conversation with us, because I was like, she's completely alone, but her baby was so premature and so unwell that she was due to be there for a long time.
Yeah.
She was there when we got there, she was there when we left. And I just thought, nobody should go through that alone.
No, absolutely
It's horrendous at the best of times.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it alone and have zero support.
Yeah.
She was just there every minute of every day,
unless
she was sleeping or eating.
Yeah.
And I just felt so sorry for her. And we came across another couple that their son was premature, and he was obviously in the intensive care unit, and they'd been there a month, and they were basically saying that they were being kicked out of the room, and they were on the same level that we were in, and they were being kicked out of that room, even though their son hadn't been discharged and he was still quite poorly. They had the added pressure of because he'd been there so long in that room, that they didn't give him any other alternative, and they weren't local either. So they were scrambling to find somewhere to stay.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, oh God, that's awful, because you're under so much pressure already.
Yeah.
When, you know, all you're doing is focusing all your energy, and then people are throwing that sort of stuff at you, like they didn't know where they would go, or...
No, well, we had the same thing, to be honest. With, obviously, I was a patient initially in the hospital, and so this, I actually saw, diverting slightly, I actually saw something on Instagram today, like, cause obviously we both talk about, we both follow a lot of, like, grief thing pages on Instagram, and there was one that was posted today that really, like, hit home with me about saying that one of the hardest parts of NICU, being a NICU mum, was being put on the postnatal ward when you don't have your baby.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, like, that was really hard for me. Like, because, you know, we went to see Luna... On the after we I gave birth, I was still in the labour ward, went to Luna, came back to the labour ward while they did what they needed to do, and then you get moved to a postnatal ward, because that's a normal process. And they put me on the furthest... I was in a side room, luckily. I don't think I would have gone if I wasn't.
Yeah.
They put me in a side room, but right at the top end of the ward. So every time I needed to go back to NICU, I had to walk past every mum and the baby, carrying the babies, feeding the babies, hearing the... babies cry, or like the midwives and care assistants would come in and be like, "Oh, where's baby?" And I'm like, "Thanks, like, you shouldn't
know. Yeah, you should
read
know.
My notes, yeah,
yeah, yeah."
And it was the hardest thing ever, because all you wish for is to hear your baby cry.
Yeah,
and I know with yourself, it's a hard point for you that when your daughter was born, you listen for that cry, and it's silent, and it's the longest silence ever. And, like, both of us didn't see our daughters when they were first born. They got taken away straight away, which, you know, they have to do because they were so poorly.
Mm.
But you don't hear them cry, and you don't really get a chance to see them. Maybe a brief passing. They did stop her incubator so I could see her briefly. And it's just the hardest thing ever, because you wait for that cry. Like, when your baby's born, your baby cries, and everyone's like, yeah. Mm. But with us, and for other people that have gone through it, like that, I found that really hard.
Yeah.
And then having to listen to other people's babies cry.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just want to hear my baby cry.
Yeah.
And I'd take all the sleepless nights now to have her here. You know, you
all the crying
moan about all them sleepless nights after you've gone through it. But, like, I'd take it over and over again to have her here.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, I found that really difficult, and I get, like, the stretch. They only have so many rooms and so much space, but maybe that's something that they should think about.
Yeah.
It's like, for, like, NICU mums or parents not to be in the midst of newborn babies.
Mm. Like, so I was the same. Like, I was admitted into their maternity unit.
Yeah.
So we obviously birthed at one trust, and then we were both transferred out to the same trust in a different area. And they put me, well, they quarantined me, didn't they?
Yeah.
And like, I was some kind of diseased patient. And they put me in this side room, and it was on the maternity unit. So all you could hear was mums and babies, like, walking the halls and babies crying and all of that. And we were, I remember just thinking, I just need to be discharged. Like, I need to be discharged. And that went on for about 5 days, I think. And it was horrible, because you get the classic dad carrying car seat down the corridor. The amount of people we saw, because we were, the room that we were in, it was near, like, the maternal, like, the postnatal wards, so you could hear everything. But we were on the corridor walking out.
Where you see them? Yeah, so
they were just walking past our room constantly, constantly. And the amount of dads, like, that you saw, like, carrying those car seats and stuff, and it was just horrible, because you think, oh, why am I here? I could just be on any ward. But I know that in our trust, the maternity ward was right next to the neonatal unit.
Yeah.
So, you know, logistically it was better, but emotionally it's actually
and it's
hard.
Not good for you, is it? Like,
no.
It really doesn't start your mental health well after a difficult point. Because that's all you want, again. Like, that's, like, the typical new parents thing is, oh, get a picture of dad carrying baby out. Mm. Like, all healthy and well, and we're going home.
And we didn't get that.
No, yeah, and, like, that. When you've just said that, like, I always get panicky.
Yeah.
But I get, like, I can feel my heart racing because it just strikes, like, a bad memory for me, because I remember saying, I think I said it to you girls, that is all you want when you have a baby, is to have that picture of dad walking out. And like, we did it with Lila, you know, we were like typical parents who did it.
Everybody does it.
Yeah.
You know.
And I remember saying to like several people, especially like to the hospital after we found out a lot of things that went wrong.
Yeah.
Is that we never got to take that picture of Richard walking home.
It was stolen from you.
Yeah. And the only picture that I do have is a memory of him carrying her down the aisle at the funeral.
At the funeral, yeah.
Yeah, and like that, nobody should ever have to have that. That's like my lasting image of Luna as such with her dad, is that he had to carry her casket down to the at the funeral. And I just think, oh God, like it's just...
Yeah, I think... And people do take it for granted, I think.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And it's not... It's not it's, it sounds horrible to say that, but... The people do, you know, and everything's gone straightforward
and smoothly.
And
we took our second pregnancy for granted.
We don't begrudge people that have, you know, never experienced this, because you don't want, you would, like you say, you've said it before, you wouldn't wish this.
No, absolutely not.
On your worst enemy.
No.
Because it's just the worst thing you can ever go through.
It completely changes your life.
Oh, yeah.
It changes you, and it changes your life, and everyone else that's around you and involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a life-changing,
traumatic
event that you'll go through, and it will stay with you forever.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The memories as well. Like, I find that it could be something that you never think would be a trigger.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden...
Yeah.
You think, oh, God, I remember that. And I was thinking the other day, sort of deviating from sort of neonatal care, I can't remember what triggered it, but I was sat here where I am now, right behind my desk. And maybe I was thinking about the podcast, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember they gave me all this medication when I was in the maternity unit. And because... I don't even know why I had them now, but you'll probably be able to tell me, that they basically shoved a load of...
Blood thinning injections.
At me. And I know it was because I had a C-section, but they were like... And they were administering them while I was in their care, so I didn't think much of them.
Mm.
And then they were like, here you go, off you go. Yeah,
go and jab yourself every
night. Literally start injecting yourself. And it probably sounds quite trivial in the grand scheme of things, but I remember sat there in the room upstairs, and I had this needle in my hand, and I'm thinking, I've got to do this for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, every day for 6 weeks. And I just stood there, and it must have taken me like 15 minutes to like inject myself, because I've never had to administer my own medication. I remember finding that quite tough. And
yeah.
My husband was like, do you want me to try and do it? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, because if you go back to work...
Yeah, I have to do it.
I've got to do it.
Yeah.
And it's things like that that I remember finding that really tough.
Yeah.
Just what very small, minute detail.
Yeah.
And I was triggered by it the other day. And I've not thought about that.
No.
Yeah. For so long.
So I had tinsparin with both deliveries, with Lila and Luna. And they said it was because of my BMI. Sorry.
Oh, is that? No,
sorry to say. Yeah.
On the chubby side.
Yeah. We both like cake and chocolate. I mean,
Jodie. Last fucking show.
Yeah. But whatever. Yeah, I had to have them as well. And with...
Did you do it for 6 weeks?
No.
Jodie. Did you get 6 weeks worth of medication?
I think I did. Well, I didn't do it. Like, I did it for a bit.
Yeah, so I did it for about 5 weeks, and then I was like, I've had enough.
I just had enough of it. It hurt. It bloody hurt.
Oh, I was bruised. I bruised like a peach. Anyway,
I do.
But you did it in your stomach. Yeah. I did it in my thigh, which I found easier.
Pinch an inch. Tell you to pinch an inch.
Yeah, I've got an inch on my thighs.
I've got plenty of inches, love. Don't worry about that. Yeah.
But they were like, don't, like, avoid the muscle and stuff. But sometimes if
really
you hit
stings.
It wrong.
Yeah, stingy and a massive bruise.
Bruised.
Yeah, all my stomach along here was bruised. Because, like, they tell you to, like, alternate it, obviously.
Well, I didn't want to do it in my stomach because I'd had a C-section.
Well, you had a C-section, so that's why they probably said about your leg.
So, like, I was, like, battered and bruised from my C-section. Couldn't walk.
Mm.
Like... pissing into a catheter, and then they start on these
jabbing
like,
you
jabbing me and on and then you're like, yeah, it's up to you now for like 6 weeks. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, so it goes off, like, I think it goes off your weight, like, oh my God, I forget so much now. I don't do
Does
nursing
it go
anymore
off your weight?
But I know they have different, so I had tinsparin, I don't know what you had, but there might have been a different
blocked it out.
So I exactly, but obviously I'd administered loads of these, given out loads in A&A. So I know it they can change like the dosage depending on your weight, how much you need to have. So I don't know.
I know it's only 10 like, days or 6 weeks. I think that's the only that's the only two.
I don't know. I was 6 weeks like you after delivery.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever the unit was, it's in like thousands.
Did you have a blood transfusion? Did you have a blood transfusion? Because he said that's something that might have been
Didn't have a blood transfusion. I don't think... No, I didn't. They were going to, and then they said no.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't.
That played a part.
Yeah. So I remember that they give you, it goes in like thousands, like 20,000, 18,000, depending on your weight.
Mm.
Anyway, they decide, they have all different dosed syringes, like for a different amount. And I don't know, I can't remember what it was, but say mine was like 20,000.
Mm.
They didn't have 20,000 syringes for me to take home. So they give me
two
the bastards. Yeah. They
have
to do two a day.
Oh.
Arseholes. So that's why I stopped, because it was hurting me too much.
Well, I don't bloody blame you. Like, who's saying that?
And you're still, like, you're active.
Mm.
Well, when you're in NICU, you're pacing up the bloody corridors constantly, aren't you?
Oh, so it reminds me, because I've got, there's somebody I know that's going through, like, the IVF process.
Yeah.
And they administer some medication, and without going into too much detail, the medication she's got to administer to herself, they haven't give her they've not given her the right dosage, like you just said, that they've split it so she gets the right dosage. She's got to administer this medication four times to get the right dose.
That's, I mean, how ridiculous. Like, when they make it in different doses.
Yeah, and it's, like I say, it's a tough time already. And yeah, just
sorry,
it
don't do this once, do it four times.
Yeah, and that's twice a day.
Oh my God, poor girl. Yeah. Yeah, it's just awful. They're just stupid. I'm sorry. Like, you're all just stupid. And it's
make
just
it
lazy.
For people,
yeah,
guys.
like you say, like these women, men, whoever, are already going through a really shit time, and you're making us jab ourselves 50,000 times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? But,
but we deviate.
Yeah, anyway, let's deviate. So let's get back onto NICU. I think one thing that I just thought about, maybe we should just talk about, I think we've both experienced it, is the things that people should and shouldn't say.
Yeah.
Especially on the doctor's side of things.
Right, yeah.
So
which who should know better.
Yeah. So, and I know, like, yourself, when the lady doctor came to you and said, oh, I should have done better, or I'm sorry, or whatever she said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you just shouldn't say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's really important. So if there is any doctors, nurses, midwives, whoever listening out there, just to help people to think about what they say before they say it, especially in these very sensitive situations. Because several times I had people say things to me and I'm like, really? And one of them's just, this is what made me trigger and think about it, was when I basically asked the doctor to discharge me because I was on the, postnatal ward. And to be able to get a flat on the first hospital that we were at, well, the second hospital, really, but the first NICU hospital we were at, to get a flat, you had to be discharged. You couldn't be a patient. So, and I was panicking because there wasn't many of these flats available, but my nurse that was looking after Luna told me that there was one available. And, like, if we were an hour and 40 minutes away from home, we couldn't just pop.
Not feasible.
No. So I had to stay there. Well, I wanted to stay there anyway, obviously. But they were chucking me out, basically. So I was like, well, you discharge me. Just discharge me. Give me my medications. I'm off, like, I need to get this flat. And luckily, it worked. I got it.
Yeah.
But when he came to do, like, discharge summary, he said, would you like me to prescribe your contraception? And I just looked at him and I was like, do you really think I'm thinking about having another baby? Like, when I've had an extreme preterm baby that's currently...
Or even having sex.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I'm that.
Like,
what
good
thing
am I going to
do behind a curtain in NICU? No, Jesus.
No judgment for people who have sex straight after giving birth. But...
No, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably not advisable, even if everything goes straight forward, for at least
I think they say, like, about 6 weeks,
they say
they?
6 weeks, just as, you know, anyone that's just had a
standard
delivery,
full-term, healthy,
you know, no issues, whatever, six weeks, so no judgment, but, because people, you know, you can get pregnant pretty much straight away.
Yeah, well, your hormones, are on
like,
fire.
My husband was wiping my arse.
Same.
Pretty much.
Changing me,
like,
bloody Yeah. I was going to say period pants, but they're not period. Nappies. Well, they are nappy. Yeah, I don't nappies.
Yeah, I don't think my husband's going to go,
see something else.
Sexy.
Yeah. Oh, I want a bit of that. On the hospital bed with it collapsing.
No. Like, I couldn't even walk, let alone do anything else. So,
yeah, let alone get your leg over.
That's just insane.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a tick box exercise that he's saying, but still.
Come on. Like, it's literally in front of you. This woman's just delivered at 23 weeks.
Yeah.
Do you really think I'm going to have another baby?
Yeah. Or even be thinking about, how, like you say, having sex.
Yeah. So I just remember looking at him and being like, no. And he was like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah. Because obviously we were hoping to be in NICU for X amount of months until Luna would hopefully be well enough to go home. Mm. And I was like, no. So, yeah, just think about what you're saying. Another one for me was when I went into hospital still pregnant. I think we've mentioned it before, but in case you haven't listened to it. When I first went in, when my waters broke, obviously they didn't believe me. Anyway, went in and she examined me and she said, yes, I'm really sorry to confirm your waters have broke. And they call it PROM, preterm premature rupture of your membranes. And she looked at me, she went, oh, but don't worry, it might not happen on your next pregnancy. And I was like, excuse me, like, you've just told me my daughter's still alive?
Yeah.
Like, why would you say that? Oh, and that, these things stick with you. And with me. And it was literally like within the first 10 minutes of this woman meeting me. And I'm still pregnant, still got an alive baby.
Yeah.
Just going through, you know, a medical emergency. And you just tell me that, don't worry,
like,
it won't happen.
Like,
next
you haven't
pregnancy.
Actually got any emotion that you're just thinking, it'll happen next time.
Yeah. What's that?
Be fine next time.
Thanks.
Like, it's really frustrating. Like, we had a couple of incidents when we were in NICU.
Yeah. Hey, she's learning.
Yeah, learning. I had to think about that before I said it. One was when we were in high dependency, and I don't know whether she was just being an arsehole or it just came out wrong, but I was still in a wheelchair at this point.
Yeah.
And we'd been next to our daughter like all day, and I was exhausted, and what we tended to do is sort of at the end of the day, my husband would take me back upstairs, we'd have something to eat together, we'd both have showers or whatever, look after ourselves, and then my husband would go down to see her on his own before bed and sit with her. And I remember I was leaving for the day because I was gonna, like, say, go eat, go clean up, pump, all of that, and get in bed, and my husband was gonna come down later. And one of the nurses, so we had one-to-one care in the high dependency, as you've said. She was probably the one of the nurses that I was like, you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but
you do when you're looking after your daughter.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, she seems a little bit, and she was nice enough, and she was obviously more than capable, but I always got this impression that I just don't trust her as much as the others, because maybe it was just the way she conducted herself. And our daughter was due a nappy change. And obviously, we've been doing them through the day and do the care, you know, the wiping of the eyes.
Well, yeah, because they love the parents to get involved, don't they?
Yeah. And I remember her, we must not have known that a nappy was due for changing or whatever, but we got it getting up to leave, you know, saying our goodbyes to our daughter. And she was like, oh, she's due a nappy change. And, like, I just managed to sit back down in, like, my wheelchair, and my husband was just wheeling us out and stuff. And I was like, would you mind just doing it for us? Because we're just heading to go and get something to eat. Literally, we were walking out the door. Mm. And she was like, oh, yeah, I can do that, no problem. But most parents like to do it. Oh. And I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, we've been here all day. Like, we're just on out the door to take care of ourselves after being there for like 10 hours or whatever. We've barely eaten, you know, we just need some time to look after ourselves. Yeah. And she made me feel really guilty.
Yeah.
That I thought, you know, like, and I think at this point, like I couldn't, like, wear anything, like, around, like, my stomach, like, so I was pretty much, like, just in, like, a nappy and then, like, a really long, like, dressing gown.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't wear, like, clothing. And I just thought, like, I can barely stand up.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been sat here and I'm super uncomfortable because of the trauma that I've been through as well through surgery.
You need to go change your own nappy.
Yeah, I need to, exactly. I should have said that.
Yeah, you're like, you have a mess of hands in a minute, love.
Yeah. Like, but it made me feel really guilty.
Yeah.
And I was like, And maybe she didn't mean it in that way, but no. That's what she said.
And that's how you perceived it at that time.
Yeah.
And I think I would have done the same. I'd be like, what?
And she's like, oh yeah, most like parents like to do it when they're here. And I'm thinking, we've been here all day. Like, please don't make me feel guilty for taking an hour to go and look after myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm in a situation where I can't take my baby with me.
No.
Like, I'm leaving her in your care.
Yeah.
Because she's so poorly. So that was really the only thing other than when we were in low dependency and they were basically getting us ready to go home, and it was all about establishing feeding, whether that be by a bottle or by breast, whatever, because she was fed through a tube up until quite close to being discharged. And the lady, I think I've mentioned it before, the lady was like, do you know how to do the formula? You know, and I said, well, I've got a tin at home. And I said, but I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know, like, quantities or whatever. Yeah. And she went, oh, it boggles my mind how people aren't prepared. Like, dead casual.
I think I would have punched her.
I was like, can I not just read off the tin?
Yeah, I can read, you know.
I was like, I'm sure, like I'm not a genius, but I'm not stupid.
Healthy baby. The midwife don't tell you how to make a formula.
And she was like, yes, it's one scoop for every 30 ml of water. And I was like, that's on the tin, right?
Yeah, it is. On every single tin. And if you Google it, it's there.
Why, it's there. Like, I mean, so I was just like... Oh. And she was like saying like we weren't prepared. And I'm thinking, no, love, I wasn't prepared for having my baby born, not breathing, having brain damage, being transferred to another hospital, being in intensive care for 2 weeks.
No, but I'm tired, actually.
Reading the formula tin has not been my top priority.
No. Oh, my God.
And then she was like, we got into low dependency, and we overheard a conversation for, like, the next baby over. So this is when they weren't in incubators, they're in cots, but they might still be attached to one or two machines.
Mm.
Like, so she had like a heart rate monitor, for example, and a feeding tube in at this point, but no other machines. But like, there was other babies there. Like, there was some babies that were like jaundice in that unit as well, so they were having some treatment for that. But over in the next bed, we overheard a conversation about nappies.
Mm.
And of course, we'd been there and never had to supply our own nappies.
No,
It's never been something that anyone brought up to us. But then we overheard a nurse telling another family, oh, you need to start bringing nappies in.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no one said that to us.
Mm.
So I thought, well, I don't want to be in a position where they of course, they'll always supply nappy, like, if you're desperate. But I was like, I don't want to be in a position where we're left with nothing and then it's an awkward conversation. So I thought, I'll just ask.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, you do have to supply your own nappies. But when a baby obviously is super sick, we don't sort of impose that rule on it, you know, on you and stuff. And I was like, my God.
But they should, like, have a sign up or, like, give, you know, like, when they give you, like, a welcome pack. Did you get a welcome pack to NICU?
Oh, I don't even remember.
So we didn't really look at it.
We just
used a water bottle. We got a water bottle. It was of the charities. It's called Spoons that we had for that hospital. So we got a pack, like, that Spoons obviously supplied, and it's just a little Hessian bag with a water bottle and little bits about NICU. Like, you think they put it in there?
Because
we were the same. We didn't know. Obviously, Luna was tiny, so hers were like specialist. Well, so they were actually Pampers, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, we didn't know this either. Like, what? You wouldn't have even, we hadn't even bought nappies for her at this point because she was 23 weeks. You know.
So. And I packed like some.
Yeah.
So,
but you only pack a limited amount, don't you?
Yeah, like, I think I brought a pack with me,
mm-hmm.
Which I was like, oh my God, like, now we need to supply nappies. Like, obviously, newborn babies go through a nappy. What? It says like an average like 12 nappies a day when they're newborn.
It's ridiculous. I was like, Jesus. It costs a fortune.
Yeah. So I was like, this pack's going to last like 3 days.
Yeah. No, I know. So we only heard it off another
family,
like you say, when you're going to make a brew, or we had milk rooms where you could clean all your bottles and sterilise your bottles. And I got speaking to the mum that happened to actually be next to Luna with her little boy, who was also born at the same gestational age.
Oh, wow.
And he was about 2.5 weeks ahead of Luna, so he was about 25 and a half weeks at the time.
Right.
So it was really comforting to speak to her, because Richard, like, I was there all day, every day. Richard would come and stay
in and out,
most of the day. But if I was there early in the morning or later on at night, you are just on your own and your mind just does crazy things. So he was like, just try speaking to other people. So when I went to the milking room, sounds awful, doesn't it?
The milking room.
Yeah, there was another woman and another mum, and it was this lady, and we started speaking and talking about our babies, and it was really comforting because like we had hope listening to her story because she was a little bit far ahead but in
the same situation.
Exactly. And she was the one that told us about nappies and said, oh, do you know that like they do make you buy them? And I'm like, well, do they even make nappies that small? Like, where'd you get them from? You don't see nappies for 23 weekers in the supermarket, do you? So they actually told us that the chemists supplied them. They were like prescription nappies as such.
Oh, right.
So when we nipped out, when we were given a flat in the hospital, we nipped out to do like a food run, get like some microwave meals and stuff. And I actually went to the chemist and asked them, and they hadn't got a clue. But so I never got them anyway. But you know, we weren't there for that long, and then got transferred, and they just like Luna's nappies were like literally tiny. Got one at home as like a keepsake memory, but they were diddy little things. And you need to know these things. Like you say, you're thrown in this complete other world that you'd never heard of before, never known anything about, and then they're like, just expect you to know everything. And you're like, no. Like, tell me these stuff.
Going back to being completely petty, because Joey spoke about like cost attached to things, and you just saying about nappies and stuff and supplying nappies and then having to try and find specialist nappies and things like this. Because I was talking about the cost of a toastie, if you remember, at the hospital.
The hospital cafes are ridiculous.
Yeah, but I was thinking, it's of no fault of your own where you're in this situation. And if anything, someone might have put you there because of the lack of care. You know, you shouldn't have to be forking out for all of this stuff. Like we were there for a couple of weeks, as you know, and you know the amount of money that like our parents probably spent, one in like fuel getting back and to the visit hospital, and bringing us stuff. They were buying us food and you know all sorts. And like my mother-in-law is brilliant, but she always buys like the branded stuff. So I remember asking for some Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, like just thinking, just get me like
just Tesco's own. Yeah.
And I remember, it's quite funny actually, she sent my husband's stepdad out to the supermarket, and he bought a box of Kellogg's Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, but it was the small box. And I think she told us that she sent him back to the supermarket to get the biggest box. So she's bought this small box of Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes, the branded one, and then said, no, that's too small.
A big box.
Yeah, she's a big box. It makes me laugh now, but like they were keeping us in like meals and then, you know, when they were visiting the hospital, like we'd go in by like lunch, because obviously you can't eat by the bedside.
No, you have to go out,
So we, you know, had like lunch together in the family rooms and stuff. So yeah, you just think nappies, surely that shouldn't be a thing that you've got to provide yourself. Yeah. But hey ho, it obviously is.
Yeah, I don't know if your hospital did the same. I think we've briefly spoke about it before, but the hospital that Luna was born at and the NICU that were there, they had signs for, I mean, I don't really agree with it, but for breastfeeding mums.
Right.
You got one free hot meal a day. So, like, the NICU receptionist would give you a voucher.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, I know.
You can't, some people can't do it.
So, you know, lucky. Well, not lucky because I'm on NICU, but I was pumping for Luna. Which I'm still, like, baffled by at 23 weeks pregnant that your body can actually do that.
That's amazing.
So, I was pumping for Luna. So, I felt bad asking for it. Like, at this point, it was, like, literally a couple of days in.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd literally got a room with a mattress on the floor kind of thing. Like, there was nothing special. So we weren't eating properly, because you don't think of yourself.
No, you don't.
And
you got limited 24/7 facilities as well.
Yeah, limited facilities. Like, I don't want to eat sandwiches from the shop or whatever every day.
We had like, two takeaways as well while we were there.
Yeah.
And got delivered to the hospital. And I'm like, that's grim.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you get a takeaway delivered to your hospital? Stephen was like, I'll just go to the front of the hospital and, like, wait.
Yeah.
And then come back. So that's what we ended up doing. But we were just on shit meals. Just for some substance.
Something quick. You want something quick so you can get straight back to your cot side.
Yeah,
quick and easy. And then like you say, you've only got like a microwave and a toaster. You don't have an oven.
No. So that's what we ended up doing. Mm. So like you say, it really makes me angry, even though it's such a petty detail and I hang on to the petty things. Because it's just another source of anger that just tots on the list.
Oh, definitely,
You know, the amount of expense. Yeah,
sorry, hang on.
Oh, finger in her ear.
Oh, there we go, right.
It saves you headphones. Oh, no,
giving me itches, right.
It's just the amount of expense, you know, not just for us, but for family. And I think...
Well, the petrol for Richard. Traveling an hour and 40 minutes twice a day.
And you don't think of it at the time, but it's just something else that you like.
And you're not working. Yeah. You're both not working.
Yeah.
Like, some places are lucky that they pay you, others not so. So if you're in a situation where, especially the dads...
Yeah.
Like, because if you've got... a NICU baby prem like us at 23 weeks,
yeah, you'd have to go like that
doesn't
to
get any
paternity for 2 weeks, which is sat in a hospital.
And if you've got a nice employer, they might give you like an extra week or whatever. Luckily Richard's were very supportive and nice, but I literally said to Richard, he wanted to be there, obviously. He's a very involved dad, and we had another daughter to look after
as well.
I think
that's the difference, is that if you didn't have Lila, Richard would have been there with you.
He still would have been there
every minute of every day.
Yeah, absolutely. You couldn't go back to work and concentrate when your daughter's in intensive care, could you?
No, of course not. But also, like, it's just from a support perspective. If you take work out of it, you would have been there, but when you've got another child, you've got to have sort of one parent in one state of mind and then another parent in another state of mind. Like, you were quite lucky that Richard was so hands-on that you could just fully concentrate on Luna.
Yeah.
And you knew Lila was being looked after.
Yeah, definitely. And it's only recently that I've actually thought about that more. Mm. I did very much just take that for granted.
Yeah.
And I didn't think of the impact that it had on Richard.
Yeah.
Because
how hard it
would have been to switch roles of being like supportive dad to me and to Luna and to listening to the horrific conversations that we had to go through.
Yeah.
To then having to switch off, drive an hour and 40 minutes home and be like happy, silly daddy
like
at home.
Nothing's going, nothing's
and
changed.
And I've never really thought about that because I didn't have to do that. But like, oh my God, like these dads have to go through what we go through. And like we've discussed before, watching us go through it as well. It's like we were both poorly, we're both unwell, and they have to watch us and make decisions for us as well as their daughter. Like, you don't realise. Like,
I think we've said, haven't we, that it's not, these type of subjects are not spoken about enough anyway.
No.
But we always think about it from the female's perspective.
Definitely,
And we've said that we would do sort of a dad episode or a dad's perspective episode, that, you know, if you've got any dads out there that want to share their side of the stories that, you know, maybe their partners have shared with us, or anybody, you know, anyone that's suffered sort of any mental health issues relating around, you know, trauma and grief and loss by becoming a parent or trying to become a parent as well, because that must be also very, very hard. I think on the flip side, that, you know, if you're trying to conceive, that it's not only mentally and physically hard on the women as well, it is hard on the men.
Yeah.
From a, I can imagine, from a sort of a helplessness.
Yeah, like what else can we do?
Yeah, like there's nothing that we can do to
definitely
sort of help.
Yeah, well, we've got several friends that have unfortunately been in that position or are in that position. And listening to like them talk about their experience, like with their husbands or partners as well, like, yeah, there's definitely a massive side there that's even more so not spoken about.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, if there's any dads out there,
or any
dads-to-be, or dads that are waiting to have a baby or trying to conceive, then you're more than welcome to reach out and speak to us as
well. Yes, this podcast is not just for the ladies.
No. But, yeah, I think we said before that we were just going to say, like, thank you to a lot of people that have contacted us.
Yeah.
We won't mention names, obviously, but we have had several people that have messaged us on our Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't think we've had anyone email, have we, yet?
No, not that I'm aware.
No. Well, not that we've checked, anyway. Sorry if you have.
No, I get it on my phone. I've not had any notifications, but, yeah, it's all been through either Messenger or...
Yeah, social media, isn't
social
it?
Social media and things,
Yeah, that have reached out and said, like, thank you to like us for sharing our stories and for opening up, for them that have also been through similar things or feel the same things that we felt and gone through, same traumatic experiences. So we have got a few people that would like to share their stories. So that's going to be, whether it, I don't know, don't think the next episode, but maybe episodes to come. We just need to get a few recorded, I think, don't we? Have some meetings with some of these lovely ladies.
We've got a couple that we're trying to line up, which there are a few ladies, actually. We haven't actually got any men booked in, but we've had someone reach out that is more from a mental health perspective, who is a man. Old school friend. He might, if he listens, he might know who we are, so or who he is, should I say, who we're referring to. But that was also nice to hear from him, because he's had his own struggles with mental health, so this can this might touch people from a different perspective, more from a mental health perspective, and how you know, we choose to cope, and listening to other people that are going through issues, whatever they may be.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And talking, like for us, like actually talking about whatever your issue may be.
Yeah.
Like for us, obviously, we've both been through traumatic birth or baby loss.
Yeah.
Which
has developed that into mental health problems. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think any mental health problem, you just need to talk. Like, be open and honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And reach out and talk and, you know, listen to other people's way of dealing and coping. And because there is a lot of support out there. But again, unless you're going through it, you don't know about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've never, I mean, even working in the NHS, never needed to reach out for mental health. And again, even if you do, it's so hard to get hold of.
So hard.
Like, we've both been through the same. Like, it took, like, 6 months after the death of my baby to be able to get support, which, like, what do you do in those first 6 months?
Yeah, you need help now. Yeah. You need help now. And I think that just shows you how under-resourced the NHS is.
It's massively under-resourced,
You know, when you need help and you're seeking help, you know, a six-month waiting list is just...
It's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
No.
You know, because you've said to me, you've encouraged me to go to the doctor, and I'm thinking, yeah, but I need help now.
Yeah.
I need to talk now. And Nicole's basically become my therapist.
That's fine, I don't mind.
There wasn't a six-month waiting list to speak to Nicole, so...
Queue up, everyone.
Yeah, queue up. But this is our own... You know, I've always said that it doesn't need to be somebody who's impartial either for me. It's... I wanted to talk about what had gone on in my story and then how that's made me feel. I've never really had a problem with telling my story, but the way that has impacted my mental health, I've never ever thought that I would have to admit that I have a mental health problem.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd struggle with mental health. You know, I'm quite resilient. And, you know, like say, going back a couple of years, I would have never anticipated that I would ever say I've got a mental health issue.
No.
And because I've always tried to be the tough one or the person that makes a sarcastic joke as a coping mechanism. But that seems to have gone out the window now. Like, I feel like I have to admit that I'm not coping.
Yeah, definitely.
Or I haven't been coping in certain circumstances, and I'm finding elements of parenting hard, and the person I am now is not the same person I was.
No.
And I don't feel as strong.
Yeah, definitely.
As I was, and that's quite hard to admit, because I've always sort of prided myself on being quite a strong, resilient person, you know, take things as they come, take things in my stride, you know, if anything's difficult, I'll deal with it head on. And I feel like that part, side of my personality has completely changed.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's like the same with me, like, I've always been the one that everyone comes to talk about.
Yeah.
Tell me your problem, like, because Nicole will listen.
Agony
Aunt Nicole, you know, over here. And obviously with my job, like, I'm a caring person.
You are a caring person. You're maybe not in...
Don't care as much now, sorry.
You're not in the medical profession anymore, but that part of you...
Yeah.
You feel like it's disappeared, but
yeah,
it hasn't.
No. Yeah, but, like, that's probably why... I mean, like yourself, you said, like, unfortunately, when you suffered your miscarriage, your first instinct was, we'll go to Nicole, because she's a medical professional.
Oh, it's first phone call.
Like, you didn't come to me as a friend as such, even though we were friends. You came for me for medical advice.
Yeah, I did.
So I've always had, like, a lot of that, a lot of friends and family that have been like, oh, ask Nicole, she'll know.
Yeah.
But then I've also, you know, a lot of friends have opened up to me previously, and you know, I will listen and I will help, and I still will. I'm not saying that's gone. I still will.
Yeah, but you've got now your own burden to bear.
Yeah, and so that's the thing that's changed for me is, although I've been through difficult stuff in the past this, I've never put myself first. Like, I'll put everyone else first. Whereas after we lost Luna, we were like, no, we need to put ourselves first.
100%.
And that's what's changed for me. And when you've gone through, like, the traumatic thing and losing a baby, like I have, like, you have to put yourself first.
There's no other choice. But
no, yeah. And so...
Other than your other daughter.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
No other choice.
Yeah,
family. You as a family
are number one.
Number one, you're the key, and you're the most
definitely.
Important
yeah.
thing.
So, yeah, so, and when you've got so much of your own grief and trauma and mental health and all these things that you now have to deal with, what you've never had to deal with before, like, I can't take on other people's problems without sounding awful.
No,
obviously.
It's not awful. Stop.
No, I know. I have to apologise all the time.
Stop.
People always tell me I apologise too much. And I think
tell
her.
She says sorry all the time, and I sometimes want to punch you in the face.
Oh, God.
Just stop saying sorry. Yeah. Like, because...
But it does make you feel... Well, it makes me feel guilty.
And selfish. Because you're thinking of yourself, but
cause I'm,
no.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, I don't want to... Like, sorry, but I don't want to listen to your problem because I've got my own shit to deal with now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, sorry, I just don't care as much about you all.
No, but it, like I'm of the mindset that I'm like, screw anybody else.
Yeah.
You as long as me, my husband, and my daughter are okay, and we come first, and... Like, I've always been pretty good at saying no.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
sorry, I won't have to admit that.
Yeah, no, I am. Like, I won't
you've been
do anything.
Like, you say you're very strong. Yeah, yeah, if you don't want to do it, you're not doing
I'm
it.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, whereas
you know?
I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll call him if I have to.
But I'm even more so that way now. That, you know, there's certain things that I would let slide or, you know, I'd do things out of obligation or whatever. And I'm thinking, you know what, screw that. Life's
not
too
doing it.
Short to do that. And, you know, you know, there's a few people in my life that struggle to say no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Just
put
look after
first.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Like, even if you have to say no to me.
Yeah, say it.
You say it.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want to do something, you don't do it.
No.
Because life is too short.
Definitely.
And, you know, we were very much like that when we got discharged from hospital. Mentioned it before. You know, people just wanted to come round and thinking, no.
Yeah.
Like, we've not been at home. Like, we've just been in intensive care and, like, for a traumatic ordeal. And
unless you're coming to clean me out and do me washing.
Yeah, and that was not on offer.
No.
It was, I want to come and see the baby. And I'm thinking, no, I want to see the baby.
Yeah.
Like, I've not seen her.
No, yeah,
like,
definitely.
And we're her parents. Like, the people who think they have claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a right as well, which makes me very, very angry.
Mm.
Because that baby is ours.
Yeah.
And that, the decisions that we make... or anything to do with her life, that's
it's
for us
to
decide.
Mm-hmm.
And we will dictate terms. And so, like I say, I've always been pretty hard, but I'm even harder, I find now, especially when it comes to my daughter.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree. You got to be.
You got to be.
Like she said, life's too short. And it
life's
really
too
is.
Short. Very short.
Yeah.
And the things that we've been through in the past sort of 18 months, 2 years, that's just... It can never be more true that life is too short.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do what you makes you happy. You do what is best for your family.
And your family. And your mental health.
And your mental health as well. And you have to put yourself first sometimes.
Definitely.
Even before your family because, you know, we've fallen into the trap that, you know, my mental health has made us as a family... Not necessarily not work, but
it changes
struggle.
The dynamic of your family, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
You can't have a healthy relationship with your partner or your husband or your wife or whoever it may be, you know, even with your child as well, like, unless you're the healthiest version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to get back to that person.
Yeah.
So I don't think our current relationships, whether it, like you say, it's mother and daughter or... You know,
they're
husband and wife, whatever. It's still a work in progress.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But I think that sort of wraps up this episode. I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
You?
Yeah, I reckon so.
But the theme of this episode was about being in NICU.
NICU.
So
you're making me think about it.
Yeah. NICU. if you have gone through it yourself, if you've had an experience of being in the intensive care unit with your child or children, please, if you'd like to share your story, please reach out. You can get us on Instagram at Look to the Moon Podcast, or you can drop us an email. It'd be lovely if anybody wanted to share their stories that, you know, we could read out. If you're not confident enough to be actually featured on the podcast, you can email us at hello@looktothemoonpodcast.com. Or just hit us up on socials and we will definitely get back to you. We've got a couple of people that have reached out that are going through their own sort of grieving processes for various different reasons that we're trying to get on the podcast for interviews. So that will probably be in the next few episodes or so. But so for now, you'll just have me and Nicole, but hopefully you'll join us again.
So yeah, send us your messages. Or like Jodie says, just your experiences, comments to what we've said.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't have to be the mums. It can be dads.
Dads as well.
You know, anyone that's experienced it.
It could even be like, you know, if you you don't have to have children to have experienced some sort of trauma or loss.
No.
You know, if people are anyone that's struggling to conceive or, you know, have gone through sort of miscarriages or, you know, early baby loss.
Yeah.
You know, we're here and, you know, we want to speak to you and we hope that you'll find some comfort in speaking to us also.
Yeah. We're going to go for our tea now.
Yeah, Nicole's made a chilli.
Oh, yeah. Chilli and rice.
Chilli and rice. But yeah. We'll be back.
Yes, we will be back. Yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Thanks.
If you are, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully you are.
Yeah,
but
thanks,
we'll see
everyone.
You soon.
Bye.
Bye.